Knowledge Products presents The Giants of Philosophy, Baruch Spinoza, narrated by Charlton Heston, Part 6.
We may recall that in Spinoza's view, our minds are, in a sense, part of the mind of God. The ideas that constitute our minds are the ideas of our bodies. They're part of the infinite order of modes under the attribute of thought. Now, since all of these ideas are exact mental reflections of physical reality, it might seem as if all the ideas in our minds would be true ideas. But, of course, that's just not the case. We don't have only true ideas. Spinoza must explain how it is that we often hold false beliefs. The explanation is to be found in the fact that our first ideas are ideas about how our bodies are affected and modified by other things. Spinoza realizes that sense experience provides our first conscious awareness of the world. The sense organs, the eyes, ears, tongue, nose, and skin, are stimulated by things around us. These stimulations of the sensory organs, and consequently the brain, are reflected in our minds as different ideas, such as light, taste, or sound. These ideas arising from our senses make us aware of ourselves and the world, but they're highly unreliable as sources of knowledge. Perceptual ideas don't reveal the world to us as it truly is, but only as it happens to affect our senses. For example, our eyes are not sensitive enough to see the minute parts that make things up, nor do our senses reveal how things are caused by other things, according to the laws of nature. Moreover, we see things only from a single limited perspective. It's no wonder that sense perception fails to give us full knowledge of the things of the world. Spinoza emphasizes the way the constitution of our own sense organs, of our own bodies, colors our perception of other things.
From this it follows, first, that the human mind perceives the nature of a great many bodies together with the nature of its own. It follows, second, that the ideas which we have of external bodies indicate the condition of our own body more than the nature of the external bodies.
When you look at another person, you have a perceptual image, an image that you call an idea of that person. But this doesn't reveal very much about that other person. In fact, your image is not directly an idea of that person at all. Your image is actually an idea of the way in which your body, your senses, are affected by that other person. The makeup of the other person is mixed together with the makeup of your own body in a confused way. Spinoza claims that the partiality and confusion characteristic of our perceptual ideas are the source of all error in our thinking. His account of perception explains why we seem to have ideas that are not true, even though our minds are made up of God's ideas, all of which are true. As we've discussed, our perceptual idea of another person is a true and accurate idea of the way in which our senses are affected by that other person. But it's only a confused, partial idea of that person. Spinoza calls all ideas derived from sense perception inadequate ideas. They're inadequate in that they confuse the nature of our own bodies with the nature of other things. Spinoza refers to inadequate ideas as imagination, or knowledge of the first kind. It's important to note that when he uses the word imagination, he's not only referring to what we call imagination today. For him, all sense perception is imagination. It provides us with mere images of things, not the nature of those things or the causes which produce them.
When we look at the sun, we imagine it as about 200 feet away from us. An error which does not consist simply in this imagining, but in the fact that while we imagine it in this way, we are ignorant of its true distance and of the cause of this imagining. For even if we later come to know that the sun is more than 600 diameters of the earth away from us, we nevertheless imagine it as near. For we imagine the sun so near not because we do not know its true distance, but because a modification of our body involves the sun, only insofar as our body is affected by the sun.
This passage illustrates a number of points. We believe that our perceptual idea accurately indicates the distance between us and the sun because we're ignorant about how perceptual ideas are formed. If we learned more about optics, astronomy, and the physiology of the eye, we might no longer be in error. We would know our perception doesn't give us an accurate idea of the sun. But our perceptual idea wouldn't disappear because we know more about its causes. It was and remains an accurate idea of the way in which our eyes are affected by the sun. The ideas of the imagination are not false in any absolute sense. They're just incomplete and fragmentary because they don't comprehend their place in the overall causal order of nature. Spinoza claims that all falsity in our ideas is really just a matter of such incompleteness and confusion.
Falsity consists in the privation of knowledge which inadequate or confused ideas involve.
Spinoza uses this account of inadequate perception to explain what today we would call imagination. For example, when the image of a friend lingers in your mind, even after she's no longer in the room with you, Spinoza believes this is simply because your brain retains an image until something causes it to change. As Spinoza says,
if the human body is affected in a way that involves the nature of some external thing, the human mind will regard that same external thing as present to itself until the human body undergoes a further modification which excludes the presence of the said thing.
Like most other rationalists, Spinoza profoundly mistrusts the things we learn from the senses. After all, our perceptual knowledge is mediated by our body, which reveals things to our mind only through our body's own idiosyncratic ways. And of course, the human body is just one finite mode, located in one specific place. It's capable of perceiving things only in the ways and in the sequence it encounters those things. Moreover, Spinoza says the body can form only a limited number of clear images at one time.
The human body, being limited, is capable of forming simultaneously in itself only a certain number of distinct images. If this number be exceeded, these images begin to be confused, and if it be far exceeded, all the images will be utterly confused with one another.
It's not surprising that we can gain no accurate, complete, or objective knowledge of things from such questionable sources as our own fallible bodies. Spinoza sums up his view of the matter by pointing out that if the mind knows things only through sense perception, its understanding is weak.
So long as the human mind perceives things only from the common order of nature, it does not have adequate knowledge of itself, nor of its body, nor of external bodies, but only a confused and fragmentary knowledge.
He says that most of the errors and mistakes of past thinkers can be explained as confusion caused by the imagination. For example, medieval thinkers, following Plato, relied on the notion of general essences to explain things. They thought that all horses share a common essence, call it horsehood, which explains why they're all horses. Spinoza rejects this. He explains that these thinkers developed such ideas because the body is not sensitive enough to register all the slight differences among various horses. The mind forms a distinct image only of what they all have in common. Thus, horsehood doesn't correspond to anything in nature, but only to a confused and indistinct image. No wonder medieval philosophers argued endlessly about these essences.
Each person will form universal images of things according to the dispositions of his body. Hence, it is not surprising that so many controversies have arisen among the philosophers who have sought to explain natural things by mere images of things.
Earlier, we noted Spinoza's view that theologians and prophets often disagree with one another because they have different imaginations and therefore differing images of the divine. Now that we better understand his concept of the imagination, we can see why disagreements of this kind come up in philosophy and theology. In light of all the confusion and disagreement blamed on the imagination, we might think Spinoza has nothing good to say about this first kind of knowledge. This wouldn't be accurate for two reasons. First, he observes that our capacity for sense perception, that is, our imagination, exists because the body can be affected in many different ways, yet it still retains its own identity and physical integrity. Spinoza rightly regards this as a sign of the body's organic excellence and environmental adaptability. Second, and more important, Spinoza says that although the imagination is unreliable, it contains the seeds of more adequate and more dependable kinds of knowledge. He holds that the confusions and conflicts caused by the imagination can be overcome and resolved, but only in the second and third kinds of knowledge, which he calls reason and intuition. Let's look at reason, the second kind of knowledge. As we've seen, Spinoza believes that the chief cause of error in the imagination is confusion. Perceptual images are confused ideas that mix the signals our sense organs send with the nature of the things that send them. But Spinoza also believes there are certain other ideas that reflect characteristics common to all physical things. He claims that no confusion can come up with regard to these things. They're simple and everywhere the same.
Those things which are common to all things can be conceived only adequately.
Spinoza is not very clear about his meaning here, but it seems as if he's again thinking of geometry. For him, geometry is the science of physical nature. All the simplest particles which go to make up the world move in accordance with the laws of geometry. The laws of geometry are present everywhere and always, and can be conceived without confusion or error. Spinoza did not think that we'd be able to trace the details of the geometrical motions of all the minuscule simple bodies in the world. But he did believe we can know the basic principles of all motion. These are the principles of geometry. In knowing the basic truths of geometry, we know the basic structuring principles of God's power, manifested through the attribute of extension. We can then know how individual things are expressions of that divine, structured power. This knowledge is like that which we'd all call natural scientific knowledge. It involves thinking in terms of the basic structural principles or laws of nature. Spinoza calls this kind of knowledge reason, or knowledge of the second kind. It has to be distinguished from the first kind of knowledge, imagination, because imagination is the source of error and confusion. Reason reveals things as they truly are. Spinoza points out some of the characteristics of this second kind of knowledge. He said that all things happen necessarily in accordance with the laws of nature. So reason, which knows things as they truly are, reveals all things to be necessary.
It is of the nature of reason to regard things as necessary, not as contingent. From this it follows that it depends only on the imagination that we regard things as contingent.
Spinoza also claims that reason knows things in a certain timeless way.
It is in the nature of reason to perceive things in the light of eternity.
The proof of this is straightforward.
It is in the nature of reason to regard things as necessary, not as contingent. Now it perceives this necessity truly, that is, as it is in itself. But this necessity is the very necessity of God's eternal nature. Therefore, it is in the nature of reason to regard things in the light of eternity.
Spinoza suggests that there's yet a third kind of knowledge, intuition. The details of this highest kind of knowledge are not very clear, but it seems that it's related to reason in the following way. Through reason, we know that all things occur necessarily in accordance with the laws of nature. Events can be predicted and explained, but through intuition, we directly and immediately grasp the unity between individual things and the timeless, structured power of God. Things are known as manifestations of God's infinite and eternal power, with no intermediate steps of inference. Spinoza says that both the second and the third kinds of knowledge, reason and intuition, reveal things in the light of eternity. Spinoza uses the Latin phrase subspicie aeternitatis. This is perhaps the best known phrase of Spinoza's entire philosophy. More than any other, it sums up the whole tenor and direction of his thought. He would have us come to understand ourselves as a part of nature. He'd have us understand nature as the timelessly necessary expression of God's infinite, purposeless, and impersonal power. To understand in this way, each of us must overcome the limitations of being one physical body among many. We have to rise above the idiosyncrasies and distortions of our finite perceptual senses to perceive things in the light of eternity. We must know things not as they appear to us, but as they truly are in God. A sense of this exalted perspective on mankind and nature permeates all of Spinoza's writings. Here the poets and the scientists come together in their admiration and respect for him. This is the point at which reality is revealed in the light of eternity. Spinoza develops his philosophical system in a way that's abstract and sometimes difficult to follow. But the view that emerges is really quite modern, and in many ways congenial to thoughtful and scientifically minded people in our century. In his view, humans are seen as a part and a product of nature, arising from and subject to natural forces and timeless laws. We are finite creatures at risk in a sometimes hostile environment. None of us will live forever. As Spinoza reminds us,
the force by which a man perseveres in existing is limited and infinitely surpassed by the power of external causes.
Human beings are not gods, nor are we formed in the image of God. We are part of God's active self-expression, but so are snowflakes, trees, and volcanoes. We have a special status, but not because we alone possess an immortal soul granted to us by a providentially benevolent creator. Rather, Spinoza says we are special because our physical makeup is uniquely complex, and our physical complexity is reflected in our mind's ability to perceive and ultimately to understand. He believes he's discovered the truth of the human condition and the secret of our unique ability to understand ourselves and the world. But Spinoza wants happiness, and it's not yet clear how understanding is related to emotions such as happiness and unhappiness, joy and sorrow. Nor is it clear how we're to achieve what Spinoza calls the mind's highest blessedness. To understand these, we must turn to his moral psychology and his doctrine of salvation.
This is the end of part 6. Please download part 7 to continue.